You know that feeling, just
Okay.
absolutely drowning in information. It's like trying to drink from a fire hydrant some days.
It really is. So much coming at you.
Yeah, and that's what we try to do here in the deep dive. Sort of grab that hose, turn it down a bit, and give you that focused stream you need to really get a handle on something complex.
Exactly. We sift through the source material you give us, pull out the core ideas, the connections, the stuff that actually matters.
And today, we're diving into something really foundational. Doesn't get much more basic than this in a way.
Agreed. We're looking at a specific kind of argument today.
Right, a presuppositional argument for Christianity. We're drawing mainly from, let's see, pages 65 to 67, and then jumping over to 70 and 71 in the source material.
Yeah, and our goal really is to unpack this author's framework, see how they critique other ways of thinking by showing what those views have to assume just to function.
And also how this particular argument maybe differs from other similar ones you might have heard about.
Definitely. Okay, so where do we start? The author kicks things off in a place maybe some wouldn't expect.
Right. Straight into epistemology, the study of knowledge itself. Why there? You know, when you're thinking about big ultimate questions, why not start with, say, ethics isn't how we should live more immediate?
Yeah, that's a natural question, and the source tackles it head on. The argument is that things like ethics, discussions about right and wrong, they actually presuppose other things first.
They depend on something else.
Exactly. You need a foundation. The source says if you don't have a basis for how you know anything that's epistemology or, a basic concept of what reality is, metaphysics, then talking about ethics becomes, I think the quote is, unintelligible and meaningless.
Huh. Meaningless because you wouldn't even know what right means or if the reality you're applying it to is stable.
Pretty much. How can you define good or evil if you can't trust your knowledge or the world it describes? So epistemology isn't just an option.
It has to be the starting point.
According to this author, yes. It's where you begin because everything else rests on it. And crucially, because it is the starting point.
You can't derive it from something else before it.
Right. It's ground zero for thought. You can't reason your way to your ultimate starting point for reasoning.
Which immediately causes problems for other ways of thinking that try to find that starting point, right? Like, what about just reasoning backward forever? Infinite regress.
Yeah, the source mentions that. It's like trying to build a chain where every link needs another link behind it, but there's no first link attached to anything solid. It just goes on forever.
Leading nowhere firm.
Exactly. The author says that path just leads to skepticism. You can't be sure of anything. And eventually, it even forces you to deny the law of contradiction.
Why contradiction?
Well, if nothing's really anchored, if everything depends on something else indefinitely, how can you definitively say this is true and this is not true? The ground keeps shifting.
Okay, what about just throwing your hands up, saying, look, I just don't know anything, trying to opt out?
The author is pretty blunt about that one, calls it stupid and a self-contradiction.
Ouch, why self-contradictory?
Because to even say, I do not know, you're claiming to know something. You're claiming to know the fact of your own ignorance.
Right, you're making a knowledge claim about your lack of knowledge.
Exactly. So it collapses on itself, not a viable starting point.
Okay, so if infinite regress is out and saying I don't know is out and epistemology is the necessary starting point but can't be derived, where does knowledge actually come from in this view? The author seems really critical of relying just on our senses.
Very critical. The view here isn't that we build up knowledge piece by piece from sensory data. Instead, the idea is that fundamental knowledge is placed directly into the human mind by God.
Directly, like it's already there.
That's the idea. They call it innate knowledge. It's presented as distinct from empirical data, stuff you get through your eyes and ears.
So, not learned through experience initially.
Right. The source points to passages like Romans 1.2 and 2.15. The interpretation is that these show everyone inherently knows certain things about God, about morality, because God put that knowledge there.
So, experience might trigger it or confirm it, but it doesn't create it.
That's the concept presented. Experience awakens what's already innate.
Okay, this view is obviously going to clash hard with empiricism, the idea that all knowledge comes from sensory experience.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the source doesn't pull any punches. Empiricism gets called a wannabe God.
Wow.
Yeah. Also contradicted by scripture, inherently anti-logic,
Right.
a fallacy, and based on category mistakes.
Okay, category mistakes. That sounds important. What does that mean here? Like mixing apples and abstract concepts?
Kinda, yeah. The argument is that empiricism tries to get knowledge which involves propositions, truth values, logical connections, purely from material things and physical sensations.
And those are different kinds of things.
Fundamentally different categories, the author argues. Physical objects have mass, location. Sensations are well felt. But knowledge, propositions, logical laws, these are abstract, non-material.
Like trying to weigh the concept of justice on a scale.
Exactly. Or analyzing the ink to understand the meaning of a sentence. The source claims that empiricism tries to derive the non-material knowledge, logic, from the purely material sensations, objects. And that's an impossible leap, a category error.
And this leads somehow to denying the law of contradiction. How does that follow?
Well, think about it this way, from the source's perspective. If your only ultimate standard is shifting, changing sensory input.
Which is always in flux.
Right. How can you ground an unchanging abstract principle like the law of non-contradiction, that something can't be both true and false at the same time in the same way? Where does that stable principle come from in a world of just flowing material sensations?
Empiricism doesn't have a place for it internally.
The argument is no, it doesn't. It lacks the non-material foundation needed for abstract universal laws like logic. So, if you consistently only used empirical methods, you'd end up with contradictions because there's no higher non-sensory framework to ensure consistency.
So relying only on senses as your foundation isn't just incomplete, it's fundamentally illogical because it mixes categories and can't ground logic itself.
That's the critique, yes. Mm-hmm. And the source notes that historically, even some Christians have leaned on empiricism, or maybe rationalism, as starting points.
Rationalism, knowledge from reason alone.
Yeah. The author sees rationalism as maybe less fatally flawed than empiricism, because logic does deal with abstract principles, but it's still seen as a problem.
Why is that?
Because it tends to imply that logic or human reason is somehow more fundamental than God or independent of God. Like logic is a set of rules God also has to follow, rather than something grounded in God.
Which puts logic in God's place, essentially.
That's the concern raised in the source. It subtly makes human reason the ultimate arbiter.
Okay, this is all leading up to the author's big claim then. God's revelation, the Bible, isn't just one option for a starting point.
It's presented as the only necessary and proper one, the only solid ground.
That's a huge claim. And it connects to this idea of God and logic, right? Not just that God created logic.
But that God, in a sense, is logic. The source is very direct. God is logic itself.
God is logic. How do they argue that?
The key text cited is John 1.1. In the beginning was the Word, and in Greek, that's logos. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Logos. Often translated word, but it means more.
Much more in this interpretation. Not just speech, the underlying principle of reason, order, intelligibility.
Yeah.
Logic. So if Jesus is the eternal logos, and the logos is God.
Then God's very nature is rational, ordered, logical.
Exactly. Logic isn't some external system God uses. It's an expression of his own unchanging character. The laws of logic flow from who God is.
So without God, logic itself wouldn't exist.
That's the implication within this framework. It wouldn't be grounded. And the source shows how scripture itself seems to operate this way.
With examples.
Yeah, like Jesus in Mark 12 asking how David's son can also be David's Lord. The question only has force if you assume non-contradiction. He can't be both ancestor and descendant in the same relationship.
The argument relies on logic being valid.
Right. And Hebrews 7 is also mentioned as a place where the text clearly avoids contradictory conclusions from its premises. Logic is assumed.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting and where the influence of Vincent Chung comes in strongly, according to the source.
Yes, this is a pivotal part of the argument.
The idea isn't just that the Bible is the foundation for Christians, but that other worldviews, even ones that flat out reject the Bible.
But you still have to presuppose it to make any sense at all.
That sounds like a paradox. How does someone who says the Bible is false rely on it?
It is counterintuitive. That's the point. The source, crediting Chung, puts it starkly. Christianity is true by logical necessity. Christianity excludes all non-Christian views. Therefore, all non-Christian views are false by logical necessity.
Okay, wait, slow down. True by logical necessity. How do we get there? How does the non-Christian presuppose the Bible?
Okay, so the author clarifies. Look, theoretically, you could argue anything presupposes the Bible in this view. But it's easiest to see with the real basics, things any thinking person needs.
Like?
Like logic. Like the possibility of having knowledge at all, like being able to think intelligently. Any worldview, to make its case, needs these tools.
Right. You need logic to argue, knowledge to make claims.
Exactly. But the argument here is that non-Christian worldviews, particularly materialistic ones, cannot justify the existence or validity of these tools from within their own system.
We touched on this with empiricism and logic.
Right. If the universe is just matter and energy, where do abstract, universal, non-material things like logical laws come from? How can you trust that your brain, just chemical reactions, is producing truly logical thoughts or reliable knowledge about reality?
The system doesn't have the components to build logic or knowledge.
That's the claim. It lacks the necessary philosophical grounding. Yet, and this is the key, to argue against Christianity or for their own view, they must use logic. They must assume knowledge is possible. They must act as intelligent beings.
So they're borrowing.
They're borrowing. They are implicitly presupposing the very framework that makes logic, knowledge, and intelligence possible, which, according to this author, is the biblical worldview with God as the ultimate rational logos.
They're standing on the ground they're trying to destroy.
That's the paradox. They have to use the tools provided by the biblical worldview, logic, intelligibility, to argue against that worldview. And the twist is,
it's the very Bible they're implicitly relying on.
Says their own worldview is wrong. It's like using borrowed money to argue that the lender shouldn't exist. Their intellectual activity depends on the system they deny.
Okay, this is a very specific kind of argument. How does the author say it's different from, well, other arguments, maybe even other presuppositional ones?
Good question. The source explicitly contrasts it with what it calls a defective propositional argument.
Defective. What does that look like?
There's a form given on page 102. It's basically like, premise one, worldview X is contradictory, so it's false. Premise two, worldview Y is contradictory, so it's false. Premise three, the Bible isn't contradictory. Conclusion, therefore the Bible must be true.
Okay, I can see potential issues there.
Yeah, the author calls that a mistake and a non sequitur.
Meaning the conclusion doesn't follow.
Right. Just because you've shown A and B are false and C seems consistent doesn't automatically prove C is the only truth. Maybe there's a D or E you haven't looked at. It doesn't establish necessity.
So this isn't just process of elimination.
No. The author's argument, drawing on Truong, is different. It's not others fail, Bible doesn't, so Bible wins. It's more like coherent thought requires X, logic, knowledge. Only the biblical worldview provides a necessary foundation for X. Therefore, any attempt at coherent thought implicitly relies on the biblical worldview.
It's arguing for the Bible as the precondition for making sense of anything.
Exactly. The necessary foundation for intelligibility itself.
And how does this stack up against maybe more common ways Christians argue today, even using presuppositional ideas?
The source suggests many popular approaches, even well-meaning ones, tend to compromise. They might start with the Bible, but then mix it with other starting points.
Like empiricism or rationalism, the things critiqued earlier.
Yes. The source uses the term liberal theology, broadly on page 535, for any view that effectively lets human reason or experience override or judge scripture, even if it claims scripture is primary.
An example might be?
Well, say, denying certain miracles happen today, not because the Bible explicitly says they stopped, but because, well, we just don't see them happening. That's putting current empirical observation as the ultimate judge over the biblical text's possibilities.
So it's letting a human starting point, what I observe, filter the divine one, what scripture says.
That's how the author would frame it. The argument we're exploring insists on the Bible alone as the sole, sufficient, necessary epistemological foundation. No mixing and matching with human-centered starting points.
It's a very intellectually consistent, if demanding, position.
Extremely. It demands you ground everything, logic, reason, knowledge, reality in God as revealed in scripture, arguing that any other approach is ultimately borrowing from that foundation without admitting it, and thus is incoherent.
Okay, let's connect this back to you listening. As you hear different arguments, different worldviews being presented all the time, if this author's framework is right.
Big if, but let's follow it.
If it's right that the Bible is the necessary bedrock for logic and knowledge, and other systems have to borrow it, how does that change how you might evaluate those claims? Claims about truth, reality, ethics?
It really shifts the focus, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just looking at the surface argument or the evidence someone presents within their own system.
You start looking underneath.
Yeah. You start asking, what does this argument have to assume just to get started? What are its basic presuppositions about knowledge, logic, reality? And crucially, Can that worldview actually justify those assumptions from its own resources?
So it's about checking the foundations, not just the paint job.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, so the core takeaway from our deep dive into these pages today.
Well, it's the specific, potent presuppositional argument, deeply shaped by Vincent Chung's ideas. The claim is radical. The Bible isn't just an option, it's the necessary precondition for all logical thought, for knowledge itself.
And the kicker is that any other system, just by trying to argue or think rationally, implicitly uses the tools only the Bible truly grounds.
Proving Christianity's truth by necessity, even while denying it. It's a fascinating and challenging perspective.
It really is. Which leaves us with maybe one final thought to chew on. If this perspective holds, that basic things like logic and knowledge ultimately presuppose a biblical foundation, what else that you take for granted about the world, maybe ideas about human dignity, objective morality, even the orderliness of science might also, perhaps unexpectedly, rely on that same foundation, whether you realize it or not.
Something to think about.